Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, this episode of the podcast is sponsored by LEP Premium. I'm sponsoring my own content today. Sign up to LEP Premium today to get access to over 70 episodes of either audio or video content, including lessons on grammar, vocabulary, and pronunciation from me to you. And it's either available in the Luke's English Podcast app or available online. And it includes downloadable PDFs with tests and pronunciation drills. New content arrives every month, and it costs about the same as a price of coffee once a month. You can check out all the details and you can sign up by going to teacherluke.co.uk/premium. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. This is an episode of the Rick Thompson Report on Luke's English Podcast. This is where I talk to my dad about politics, especially Brexit. And here is the latest update since the last episode in November. So here's a quick summary to help you keep up during the conversation. It'll only take a minute or two. It's important to understand the overall context when listening to this so that you don't get lost and so that you can also notice language more easily. So since the last episode in November, the Tories, the Conservatives, won their election majority in December and pushed through Boris Johnson's withdrawal agreement, because all of their MPs voted for it, and because they've got the majority, that's how they pushed it through. Then the UK officially left the EU on the 30th of January this year. That's 2020. For any aliens listening to this, the year 2020 in Earth years. But nothing really changed, because we're now in the transition period in which everything stays the same for a year, and the UK and the EU have to bash out a new agreement for things like trade and regulations and stuff, a process that usually takes years. So did the Tories get Brexit done like they promised, or is there a lot more of this story yet to come? Also, what has this Conservative majority led by Boris Johnson been doing since coming to power? What about the removal of certain journalists from their lobby briefing, their wish to replace the judiciary, the resignation of Chancellor Sajid Javid because 10 Downing Street asked him to fire his team of civil servants? Now, if none of this makes any sense to you, then listen on, because you're going to hear a chat with my dad, who's been following this story very carefully, as you've heard in previous episodes of the Rick Thompson Report. So basically, what is the government up to? Who is really pulling the strings of power at the moment? And what are they seeking to do? How could Brexit actually be a power grab by a party intent on exerting more executive control on the democratic framework? Well, listen on to find out more. This is the Rick Thompson Report with Rick Thompson. Hello, Dad. Welcome back to the podcast. How are you today?
Hello, Luke. It's nice to hear from you.
Very nice to hear from you too. How is the weather?
Oh, the weather report. Well, it's actually rather nice at the moment, but we're in between two storms. Can't remember what they're called. The first one was called Storm Ciara.
Yeah.
That came ripping through last weekend and caused a lot of trees down and one thing and another, mainly, of course, in the west. Where they get hit by these things coming across from the Atlantic. And then tomorrow we're going to get Storm Dennis.
Is it Dennis?
So it's that time of year when these depressions come rolling in across the Atlantic, and sometimes they bring fierce storms. Anyway, we're in between at the moment, and it's a nice sunny day, the spring flowers are all out. We haven't had any snow. It's a winter without winter again, really. Climate change. We're just not really getting fierce winters as we used to.
Yep. Okay, then. All right, Dad, last time we spoke on this podcast about Rick Thompson Report type stuff was in episode 626. And that was before the general election that happened. So we were talking about what was going on. So let's have a little update then. What has happened? What happened in the election? What's been happening since then? What about the election?
A lot
result?
Has happened since then. Gosh, an awful lot's happened.
Mm.
So, you know, Boris Johnson had become the new prime minister after Theresa May resigned. He called an election because he didn't have a majority in Parliament and... bit of a gamble, and much to everyone's surprise, he won a huge majority, 80-seat majority, the biggest majority since 1987.
Wow.
And the reason was it was the Brexit election, and all the places in the north of the country that had voted to leave the EU were persuaded by this rather clever slogan, we'll get Brexit done. And everyone was so fed up with it after more than 3 years, and they'd voted to leave, that they switched their allegiance. So a lot of these northern places had always been Labour.
Yeah.
Particularly where they had big industries and they had trade unions, and they'd never voted Conservative.
Right.
So it was a bit of a surprise. They called that area the Red Wall, red being Labour's colour. The Red Wall was one that Conservatives could never penetrate.
Yeah.
But they did this time. Labour lost 61 seats.
The Red Wall goes across the sort of the Midlands and the north of England,
yes,
is that
that's
right?
Yes, right. Including up to the northeast, up to Newcastle and up in the northeast.
Those sort of industrial cities that traditionally would vote Labour, the Red Wall. And the Tories couldn't break the Red Wall. They couldn't get
never
beyond it.
They did before, but they did this time.
Right.
So they finished up with the Conservatives had, out of the House of Commons, which has 650 seats, the Conservatives, I could say that word, let's say the Tories, won 365, and Labour only had 202. The Scottish National Party are the third biggest party. They did really well in Scotland with 48 seats. The Liberal Democrats, the middle-of-the-roaders in the rest of the country, did badly. They only have 11 seats. So Tories are in a position where they can basically do what they like, and they are doing. So the first thing that Johnson did was pass the EU withdrawal agreement so that we would leave on the 31st of January.
So wait, I mean, this is the thing that Theresa May spent, what, 2 years, 3 years trying to do?
Yes,
he
that's
does
right.
It like that. I mean, this is obviously
like
because of the election result. But the difference being because he's got many more loyal Tories sitting in the House of Commons, that the withdrawal agreement could be voted through as a matter of course, right?
Yes, there was one major difference between Theresa May's version of the withdrawal agreement and Boris Johnson's. And that was all to do with Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Okay.
That the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland is the only border between the UK and the EU. And everyone agreed that it should remain open.
Right.
For various reasons, not least because I think if they had had a border there with border checks and customs controls, it would have been a target for the IRA. They would have made a comeback.
Yeah.
Because, of course, they're dedicated to a united Ireland. So everyone said, no, no, we're not going to have a border. But the problem was they didn't know how to have some kind of checks between the single market and a country outside it. In the end, Boris Johnson dumped the loyalist Protestant party in Northern Ireland and said there would be additional checks between Northern Ireland and the UK, and the Northern Ireland would actually stay in the customs union. So its status within the UK will be a little different.
So this is kind of like Ireland is like just a little bit more united, and the border then is between Northern Ireland and mainland Britain.
Sort of.
So you can see
we're still waiting for the details. Everyone says, oh, it'll be easy, but I don't think it will be. So that's going to be part of the negotiation that's now started.
Right.
So we left the EU on the 31st of January.
What?
Some of the Brexiteers had a party at Westminster.
Yeah.
There were lights, red, white and blue lights shone on the front of government buildings in London, and a countdown clock was projected onto number 10 Downing Street. And meanwhile, half the country was drowning their sorrows and feeling really, really bad because this referendum split the country down the middle, and it hasn't changed. We know half the country, which is we weren't leaving, and are very depressed about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to kind of summarise that feeling, because it's, you know, when you say to someone, oh, yeah, the UK is leaving the EU, this kind of legal kind of trade bloc or whatever, and you know, it might not be quite so obvious why that is a depressing thought. It's not just the economics. There's the whole kind of cultural aspect to that too, which and the fact that kind of the country we feel is sort of going in the wrong direction, and it could be very damaging, and we don't know why it's happening, and maybe people have got ulterior motives for pushing all this stuff through.
All those things are true. People say that those who are pushing for Brexit did have ulterior motives. A lot of people were going to apparently make some money out of it because they were betting against the pound and one reason or another. But basically, it's a rise of nationalism. A lot of these people were just nationalists, basically waving the flag and saying, we're a great country. It's a little bit like a mini Trump situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the EU, in my opinion, is one of the greatest triumphs ever in Europe. For 50 years, we haven't had to fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout entire history, big European nations have been at war with each other.
Yeah.
Us and France and Spain and Italy and, of course, Germany.
Yeah.
And the EU cemented everybody together. It's been the most successful trading bloc ever. It's the biggest single market in the world with over 500 million people. And it has had stability, security, prosperity for everybody. And why are we leaving? It's very difficult to explain to people in mainland Europe and say, well, why do people vote to leave? It's extremely difficult to explain. They were just told that we would take back control and that Brussels was an unelected dictatorship and all sorts of things that are simply not true.
So Brexit Day then, the actual day was the 30th of January. People were celebrating sort of the next day or midnight. So did the Tories get Brexit done? So is that it then? Is it done now?
No. In my view, this was another misleading slogan. We'll get Brexit done. They have not got Brexit done at all. We are going into a transition period. This was negotiated by Theresa May and the EU earlier, where in order to sort out all the many, many things that have to be sorted out, after we have technically left the EU, nothing changes for the best part of a year until the end of this year. So freedom of movement will continue. We will continue to pay into the budget. Everything will remain the same until the 31st of December, when allegedly our withdrawal agreement will be supplemented by the future relationship, which again will require legal endorsement. What will our future relationship be with the other 27 countries of the EU? And there are many, many outstanding issues which, as far as I can see, cannot be resolved in time.
So there's apparently something like there's a date in June, which is the deadline for getting an extension to the transition period, and then after that, yeah, at the end of the year.
Yes, you're quite right. Under the agreement, if the British government want to extend that transition period, they have to do it by June. But Boris Johnson has said repeatedly that he won't extend it. So right. We will see. You can't really believe anything he says, because he did say die in a ditch at one point rather than extend it, but then did extend it.
Yes, and lots of other things. And then, so the things that need to be agreed here are all the details of our future relationship with the EU. And since the EU most basically makes up about half of our trade in either direction, I think we buy more from them than we sell to them slightly.
Yeah, just a bit more than half.
But it's about 50% of all of our stuff is either sold or bought in the EU. So that's like 50% of everything, including medicine and all the other things that you need. So all of that has to be agreed. You know, all the details of a trade agreement have to be put in place. And we're talking about things like tariffs and border controls services, agreements over services, like, for example, airline companies sharing their aviation standards, security services and things, and trade deals and all that stuff that needs to be agreed.
Yes. The look at it from the point of view of the EU, they've created a single market which is seamless, which means that, you know, trucks can shoot all over Europe without having to stop at any borders, and there's no tariffs on anything between these member states. But Boris Johnson and his cabinet have said we will not be in the single market, we will not be part of the customs union, which is linked to that. And so it seems to me impossible to resolve that. If we're not in the single market, then we will not be able to have free movement of capital, goods, services and people. And therefore, there will have to be checks. There will have to be lots of paperwork. And there may be long queues at the border. And who knows? But how they're going to resolve it, no one knows. So but it's not just trade. There's a whole number of other issues, like fishing. Fishing doesn't account for a huge amount of proportion of the British economy. I mean, it's important culturally, and it's important for fishing communities. And we are a maritime nation. Fishing is kind of part of our history. But it only accounts for between 1% and 2% of our economy. Nonetheless, it's an important issue. All the fishing areas voted to leave the EU because they all hate the common fisheries policy, which they think imposes things on them. And it allows foreign boats to come and fish in our waters. And it tells them how big the mesh on their nets has to be. And they just want to be left alone to fish. Well, what will replace the common fisheries policy in British waters is completely unclear. We don't know how they would define British waters. They don't know whether they would get access to European ports.
So are we,
because most of the fish that British boats catch actually is sold at European ports.
So are we talking about potential skirmishes between boats of fishermen armed with hooks?
Many years ago, Iceland declared a 200-mile limit for fishing.
Yeah.
And since a lot of British trawlers fish in Icelandic waters, they kept on going there, and they started being physically harassed. And the Royal Navy sent some ships, and it became called the Cod War.
Oh, my God.
The Cod War was our trawlers being accompanied by a destroyer or a frigate, and there were clashes. BBC News filmed them happening, where the destroyer would go between two of these boats and smash into the side of the Icelandic boat that was trying to interfere with the Brits. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. It was almost like a dark comedy. And of course, in the end, all this expensive posturing meant that in the end, the British had to accept that the Icelanders had the right to exclude them. I think a deal was struck in the end.
Yeah.
Which allowed some access. Well, you never know what's going to happen. Who knows? We might be having battles with French fishing boats in the Channel. We just don't know. Lots and lots of issues that are unresolved.
Just like the good old days, eh, Dad? Back like in the 17th century when we were at war with France.
That's right.
The golden days.
Oh, God.
So
now I wanted to tell you something else. Not only are we now entering this negotiating period, which is probably not enough time to get anything agreed. The way that Boris Johnson is now behaving is really quite extraordinary. He was very annoyed that Parliament wouldn't back his withdrawal agreement.
I thought they did back it.
They did in the end. Okay. This was before he'd got his big majority.
Right, I see.
And he sent some of his Brexity members up to see the Queen
henchmen? Did he say
yes,
henchmen?
Could be henchmen, members of the Privy Council, senior people, trotted off to see the Queen to suspend Parliament. You may remember this. And
yeah, we did talk about that one.
And they told her that this was routine and it was perfectly normal. And they were just doing it because they needed to prepare the Queen's speech, which laid out legislation. Well, this was clearly designed to make sure that Parliament couldn't stop us leaving the EU.
Mm-hmm.
And it was challenged in the courts, and the courts decided that it had been an illegal act to tell the Queen that this was normal, which it wasn't, and to tell them that it was for this reason when it wasn't. And they annulled this suspension of Parliament,
mm-hmm.
and so the MPs all came back again. So the issue here is that Number 10 Downing Street is starting to behave like a president's office, a bit like the Oval Office in America, where the president has a lot of executive powers. Well, in this country, we're a parliamentary democracy backed by an independent judiciary.
Mm-hmm.
So Parliament makes laws, and the judges enact those laws, and the administration of the nation has to operate within those laws. So that's pretty well a definition of a parliamentary democracy. So first of all, he tries to prevent Parliament having a say in this crucial thing. Then we now have the media being selectively briefed. So there used to be a general lobby briefing of journalists in the Palace of Westminster.
That means?
And well, you have accredited journalists, lots of them from the Times and from the BBC and from everybody else who have passes to get into Westminster. And they are briefed by press officers and sometimes ministers themselves in lobby briefings. The lobby is basically a hall where everybody can mingle.
Yeah.
And so suddenly the lobby briefings are going to take place at Number 10 Downing Street, which is rather curious. And the first two lobby briefings, they only invited the people from friendly newspapers.
Ah, so the newspapers that were critical of them, they didn't invite them.
Well, when they discovered there was a lobby brief, there was a briefing coming up, they all went off there and they were lined up against the wall inside Downing Street and told you're not invited and invited to leave. Fortunately, all the other journalists left in protest.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have that. Yeah. But it's an indication of how they're now trying to make Number 10 the seat of government in all ways. And the man behind it is Boris Johnson's chief advisor and strategist, who's called Dominic Cummings. Dominic Cummings, he's told all the civil servants that they will be fined if they talk to journalists or sacked.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he is thought to be pulling the strings of government. Is Boris Johnson his puppet? We're not entirely sure. But it seems to me to be a very dangerous man. And the latest move has just happened. You know about the reshuffle?
I had seen that there had been a cabinet reshuffle. What is that? What is that?
With his big majority, Boris Johnson had got a number of ministers, and they sit around the table and they are called the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
And the closest minister of all to him is the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who's in charge of the money, and he lives at number 11 Downing Street, mm-hmm. and they're very close.
Yeah.
So the Chancellor was preparing a budget for 4 weeks' time, his first budget, which was going to be interesting because we know that the government is going to throw money at the north of England in order to convince all the people who voted Conservative at the election that it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
So he reshuffled it, chopped some of those ministers, promoted people he thinks are very Brexity and on side. And the Chancellor apparently went in to see him and he said, "You're doing a fantastic job. This is Boris Johnson doing fabulous.
You're doing a fantastic job."
Yeah. And everything was fine until Johnson said, "But you have to sack all your advisers, your team of advisers." Now, in a job like Chancellor of the Exchequer, you have quite a lot of expert advisers. And why? It seems that he wanted to have a combined team of advisers. So Number 10's advisers and Number 11's advisers would be one team, and actually it would be the Number 10 team. So the Chancellor's team of advisers are all going to be sacked.
Wait, so it's a huge takeover of Number 11. So Number
Something
10,
like
just,
that.
Just it was like some little coup of Number 11. They just did a huge grab, a power
Incredible.
Grab.
Anyway, so the Chancellor, Sajid Javid, said, "I resign. I'm not having that." And it's a fantastic job. And he walked away from being the Chancellor of the Exchequer because he said it's unacceptable, entirely unacceptable. Wow. The person who's behind this must be Dominic Cummings, who is the chief advisor to Boris Johnson and has enormous influence.
Essentially, what Dominic Cummings then is trying to do is basically try and grab as much power as possible, it seems.
Well, so it seems. He's trying to centralise power with himself and Boris Johnson, and Parliament and the courts are just getting in the way, and so they're trying to avoid them. So I talk about the courts in this reshuffle. The Attorney General was also sacked.
The Attorney General? The
Attorney General is a senior lawyer. He is the... among other things, he advises the government on law.
Okay.
So they have to make sure that whatever they're doing is legal, that that acts of parliament comply with existing law. You have to be a real expert in these things.
Yeah.
The Attorney General had warned them that some of the things they were doing last few months were not legally sustainable, which didn't go down too well. So he's been sacked, and in his place has come somebody called Suella Braverman.
Okay.
She is now the Attorney General. She is a youngish lawyer, very, very in favour of Brexit. She was, in fact, the chair of the little subgroup of the Conservatives, the ERG, which pushing Brexit. And she has said in the past that she wants to take back control from an interfering judiciary.
How do you like that? So their next target, then, is our judicial system.
Yeah, they're now targeting the civil service, they're targeting the media, they're targeting the courts, and they're targeting parliament.
So, I mean, let's be
absolutely incredible.
Let's be honest about this. We know there are certain types of government, and the sort of naughty governments, you know, I'm talking about the sort of autocratic ones, do this kind of thing. It's just routine stuff, right? We need to control the media, we need to try and control the legislature, we need to try and remove any obstacles.
Well, I don't know whether it's happened here. Obviously, everybody's tried to control the media. They do everywhere. Yeah. And, the BBC has always been under attack for being biased and inefficient at one thing or another, and sure enough, it is again. But what's different is the fact that they're trying to sideline Parliament and are lining themselves up to appoint the kind of judges that will be political.
It's unbelievably...
We've always had a non-political judiciary.
It's unbelievably ironic, isn't it, that the whole thing has been done in the name of democracy. And then, I mean, look at the anti-democratic steps being taken.
Yes, absolutely. And as I say, my suspicion is that Dominic Cummings is really running the country now.
Yeah.
And he is certainly not elected.
He's horrible.
He is horrible. I mean, people can look up his picture if they're interested. Dominic Cummings. He dresses badly. He likes to be outrageous. He cultivates the idea that he's a really wacky, brilliant guy.
He dresses,
wacky but brilliant.
He dresses like he's trying to be a hipster, but it's like hipster from 2003. It's not just the way he looks. It's the way he handles himself, the way he treats other people. You can see it in the way
he's so rude to everybody. He's so scathing to everybody.
He doesn't do media.
He's just arrogant.
He doesn't do interviews, but people sometimes sort of like follow him down the street and ask him questions. And he's just universally rude and arrogant and weird as well.
Yes, completely disrespectful.
Cryptic.
He shows contempt for everybody.
He gives these weird cryptic responses, which are rude and a bit disturbing.
He's cultivating the idea that he's a genius and he's working on a different level from you poor mortals.
It's really weird.
Anyway, so there you go, folks. We've had a very interesting couple of months where you know that very much I'm hostile to Boris Johnson. Anyone who's listened to the Rick Thompson Report before will know that I don't trust him at all. I think he's self-serving and he's not someone who's good for the country. So you'll just have to accept that that's my view. But generally speaking, the commentators are all aghast. And the latest twist where the Chancellor of the Exchequer resigned rather than give up his influence to number 10 is the last one. This thing about the relationship between the Prime Minister and the Chancellor of the Exchequer is very interesting. Basically, the Prime Minister always wants to spend money to get things done, and all the other ministers want to. Defence Minister, incidentally, went on the record saying that we needed some really serious investment in modernising our armed forces, which is hugely expensive. Mm. And Dominic Cummings went on the record saying they all waste loads of money and he can go and jump in the sea or something. Mm-hmm. Well, the cabinet is always wanting to get money, to spend money to do things. The role of the Chancellor of the Exchequer is to basically say we need to have fiscal responsibility. We can't spend money we haven't got. And if you start racking up a very big national debt, then the value of the pound starts to slide and you get into a very difficult situation like some countries have done in the past, like Italy. So the Chancellor has got to balance the spending with the borrowing and tax raising. And the Conservatives always say they're the low tax party. So they're about to spend an awful lot of money. And I suppose the Chancellor may well have said, this is the last straw. I'm not going to sack all my aides. But maybe he was thinking, I don't know how the hell we're going to pay for all these things without raising taxes. Let me just give you a few ideas. They've just decided they will go ahead with a high-speed rail link between London and Birmingham and then on towards Manchester and Leeds. We are one of the only developed countries in Europe that doesn't have high-speed rail.
I feel like Savid... I always get his name wrong.
It's Sajid.
Sajid David.
Yes.
Like him resigning feels like what happens when reality and fantasy collide with each other. He is a casualty of reality smashing into the government at this point, where you can imagine him going, well,
there's a reality wall, as they say.
Oh, God, right. Well, I'm out because this is untenable.
Well, it's possible, isn't it?
This
is possible.
Untenable,
anyway,
unsustainable thing.
He's been replaced instantly by a 39-year-old called Rishi Sunak,
okay,
who, again, hardly anybody had heard of. And I imagine he'll do whatever Boris tells him to do.
Yeah. Okay.
So the cost of this high-speed rail link is now put at £106 billion, let's say 120 billion euros, or if you like, 120,000 million euros. Mm. So there's just one little bit of expenditure.
What?
They're also promising investment in rail lines in the north and buses and cycle lanes. They've said we're going to spend 500 million on making bus routes and cycle routes much better. Now, this is hilarious because the Conservatives have been in power for 10 years and they have pursued an austerity program relentlessly, mm-hmm. which is cutting public expenditure to balance the budget. One of the impacts has been on local authorities. So for example, Manchester local authority or the county councils or Greater London Council, they've all had their budgets cut, and the impacts have been profound.
So wait.
So now they're saying, oh, we're going to have more bus routes. Well, the analysis shows that under the cuts, this would go only 10% of the way to putting back the bus routes that were cut over the last 10 years.
Right, right.
It's fantastic stuff.
Yeah. And so it's weird, isn't it? It's like the Tories campaigning to say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that in direct opposition to themselves. They're the ones who've pursued certain programs in the last 10 years, and now they're banging on about, well, we're going to spend money because these communities have been deprived for so long. It's like, yeah, by you.
The big one is the health service.
Right.
The big one.
Right.
Because an aging population, like everybody else has got, there's more and more demand on the health service. More drugs are available, more clever technologies available. So, running the health service gets more expensive, mainly because there's more and more people using its services. But at the end of Tony Blair and Gordon Brown's tenure, they had managed to get to the point where the health service was meeting all its targets.
Yeah.
There were lots of targets, like ambulance response time, how long you have to wait in an emergency department, how long you have to wait to get an appointment with your general practitioner, how long you have to wait to get a cancer operation, all sorts of targets. Mm. They were meeting them all. 10 years on, they are not meeting any of these targets, and some of them are spectacularly broken. So that if you go to hospital, you're very likely have to wait more than 4 hours, and you probably, you know, wait longer than that to be seen.
Yeah.
The health service is in crisis. Everybody admits it, and it's groaning in all sorts of other areas as well, like mental health provision and other special services. So during the election campaign, they said, we're going to recruit 20,000 more nurses. We're going to recruit lots more doctors. We're going to build 20 hospitals. Do you like that one? We're going to build 20 hospitals. Well, actual fact, apart from the fact they can't afford it, there is no prospect of them building 20 hospitals. And the number of nurses and doctors is falling because those who came in from Spain, France and Germany are either going home or the recruitment has fallen away.
This government
it's just completely ridiculous things to say, but they're still saying.
This government is a bit like Boris Johnson's brain. So, like, one day he's going, so we're going to invest in hospitals, 20 hospitals, 20, we'd build 20 hospitals, hospitals everywhere. And the next day he's like, so hospitals, no, trains, build trains.
It's a very, very good impersonation of Boris Johnson, Luke. You should use that on stage.
I should. So we're going to have trains, hospitals on trains is the next
buses.
One.
Buses
on hospitals on let me just make my hair messy, and Britain is a great nation. Yeah,
yes, that's the thing. We're a great nation. We don't need anybody else. So so there we are. That lots happened, and I'm rather worried that we're seeing an erosion of our traditional democratic checks and balances by a right-wing prime minister who seems to be kind of slightly drunk on the fact that he's got an 80-seat majority and he can do whatever he wants.
Right. Okay, so just the usual then, really.
It's just the usual. I'm having a whinge. I'm having a complain about British politics, as I always do. But there you go. I suppose it could be worse.
It could be worse, couldn't it? It could be worse. I mean... Can we do just 2 minutes on what's been going on in the Labour Party? Can we do that?
We can do 2 minutes on that. While all this is going on, Labour, of course, are trying to elect a new leader. Jeremy Corbyn, having lost 2 elections in a row and having lost the last one extremely badly, they actually lost, I made a note here, 61 seats.
I think he lost it quite well. 61 seats is quite good. Anyway, yes. Sorry.
So they have a rather tortuous process of electing a new leader, and this is not going to go on until April the 4th when they'll finally declare who has been elected by the members of the Labour Party. But they, you know, the candidates have to go through several hurdles first to get to onto the ballot paper. So Labour are just not there at the moment, and the opposition is very muted, which is another reason why it's worrying that Boris Johnson is doing things that I think are unconstitutional. After April the 4th, we'll be well into negotiating the future relationship with the EU. So I sincerely hope that whoever is the Labour leader will be able to scrutinise that and expose falsehoods. What will happen? I don't know. We're not due to have an election for 5 years, and with a majority like that, we won't have one. Mm. So it'll be an election in 5 years' time. Will this government have blown a fuse? Will people realize they were let down? Mm-hmm. False promises? Will all the red wall voters who voted Conservative revert to voting Labour? We don't know.
God knows. And now the sport with Alan with Alan Partridge.
Well, there hasn't been much sport the last few days apart from England's cricketers playing a one-day bash game in South Africa.
Yeah,
they've had a little rest for a few days, but they come back at the weekend with Liverpool I think 22 points clear of the top of the Premiership.
Haven't they got like 71 to Man City's 53?
Well, I feel as though I seem to remember they got to 22 points ahead. But yeah. Anyway, an amazing team. I mean, possibly the most amazing team of modern times, Liverpool. They just keep on winning.
It's incredible, isn't it? Yeah,
it's amazing.
But they play good football, though, so it's nice to watch.
Brilliant football, and it's still that great Liverpool tradition of attack.
Yeah,
and they certainly do. So, so we'll see how if they continue this amazing run. I think they've won 21 in a row or something in the Premiership, something like that. Quite a bit beyond belief, really. And yes, that's going to be good. We like the sport.
Yeah. All right, Dad. Well, thank you very much for giving us another report there.
Okay. I hope it's not too downbeat. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
We will. We don't know. Maybe aliens will land or something.
Well, that would be a good talking point.
It would be. All right.
Maybe they have already. Who knows?
Maybe they already have. Maybe. One of them is currently
Dominic Cummings.
You know, wonder why does Boris Johnson scratch the top of his head so much? It's like my mask is slipping, so
he's
going
to
hold on.
He likes to muss his hair.
If the mask slips off, then alien. Oh no!
Take me to your leader.
Imagine that. Imagine that aliens arrive. Take me to your leader. Here he is, Boris Johnson. That's your leader.
That's your leader. Okay, Lou, nice to talk to you.
You too.
And I hope you have a nice weekend coming up.
So that was another episode of the Rick Thompson Report. How long will this Brexit saga go on? I don't know. But thanks again to Dad for making another valuable contribution to the podcast again. So it's actually Valentine's Day today, the 14th of February. As I record this, I hope you have some nice plans, or maybe if you're single and you don't have a date, that you also just have some nice plans doing something else. I've prepared actually a series of episodes with a Valentine's Day theme, but I have to publish the Rick Thompson Report as soon as I've recorded it because it's quite sort of time sensitive content. I mean, stuff that's relevant to the moment. Although the Rick Thompson reports could also serve as a sort of historical document as well, I suppose, a history of Brexit. But I can't publish this series with the Valentine's Day theme today. Can you hear that? Someone's like doing some drilling. They've been doing that on and off all day, and I've been trying to record, and they're doing it again. They're like, take that, you Brexit. With your Brexit stuff. Some French guy with a cigarette in his mouth. Drilling on the rooftop. Your Brexit. So I can't publish this series with the Valentine's Day theme today. So that will have to wait. So as I wrote on Twitter, just please stay romantic for another week if you can. I'll keep drilling, he says. Okay. So next week, probably you'll get the first in a series about British comedy, and then there's a sort of Valentine's Day theme running through that. I hope that gives you a little teaser there of what's coming soon. Don't forget about LEP Premium. I recently published a big series about articles, which covers all the main errors that people make and exactly how we use articles and pronounce them properly too. So sign up to LEP Premium at teacherluke.co.uk/premium. But that's it for this episode. Have a lovely weekend or week or end. Have a lovely end or whatever. And I will speak to you next time. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.